Thank you so much, Tuula. Great to be here. So like Tuula said, I'm Sari Laurila. I come from Global Tri-Toilet Association of Finland. In Finnish, we are called Käymäläseura Huussi ry. So first, I'm going to tell you a bit more about our NGO and then going into the specifics, details, why we are actually doing this work we are doing, and then telling a bit more about our experiences and project from Finland and from our target countries in Africa. So here you can see a few of our cooperation partners in Finland and also in the target countries. So we are basically an NGO, non-governmental organization, founded 20 years ago. And since then we have been working on this field of sanitation, especially promoting tri-sanitation, ecological sanitation in our work. Our office is located in Tampere, here in Finland, but from there we work globally. We have approximately 500 members, private members, and also company members. So most of the, for instance, Finnish tri-toilet companies are part of our association. So why is this NGO established? We want to promote sustainable sanitation and also like incorporate it with sustainable development, preserving clean water and a healthy environment for future generation. So we want to save water. We want to make sure that the waters are clean and from sanitation, nothing goes into the environment and affecting environment and people's health. And also we are promoting nutrient recycling, recycling of nutrients from the toilet waste, on which I'm going to tell you a bit more later on. So far we have had quite a many projects in Finland. In Europe we have worked our neighboring countries like Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania and Russian Karelia. And in Africa we have worked so far in Zambia, Swaziland, Tanzania and Ghana, and now we also have a cooperation project in Kenya. Actually in June, I met these people in the university, so we had a quite good discussion at that site, and now we meet again here in Finland, which is very nice. One of our biggest thing is that we have had we have organized this international tri-toilet conference every 3 years. The last one was organized 2018. And now due to COVID, we have had quite many gap years, and let's see when we can arrange the next one. But this year, as we're celebrating 20 years anniversary for our association, or we organize seminar in Finland in November, and then we also organize an we are part of the organizations who are doing a sanitation summit in Zambia, which has been our target country since 2006. So we have worked there quite a long time. So that's the basics of our why we are established. And I have been working for the association since 2005, so quite long time, but the passion has really never died. So I'm really passionate of promote this ecological sanitation. As we all know, our goal is to get people to have access to adequate and equitable sanitation. and ending open defecation by 2030. This is Sustainable Development Goal number 6. And it gives us also a framework, so to say, for our work. Of course, we want people from the open defecation, as you can see from the top. There's approximately 500 million people who still practice open defecation. So we want to shift them to the this basic sanitation, or in a best scenario for this safely managed sanitation. I'm sure you were introduced these terms maybe yesterday, right? But briefly, why we are actually promoting this part, so that everybody could have access to safely managed sanitation, is that the toilet itself doesn't guarantee you that the whole chain will be good. You can have flushing toilets, but if you don't have a sewer system or a purification sewage treatment plant, you just basically spread the diseases in your backyard or the rivers or the seas or wherever the sewage water is going. So we really want to promote safely managed sanitation, and in our case, ecological sanitation, so the nutrients can actually be utilized from the toilets. So in this official terms, our joint monitoring program, service ladder classification, they can consider flush or poor flush toilets, or to the pipe sewer system or to septic tanks as improved facilities. Also VIPs, ventilated improved pit latrines, so which have like structures, and also composting toilets, which we are promoting, and also pit latrines with slabs. We may not agree this pit latrine to be very improved, but this is how their classification is going. For ourselves, we don't really want to promote pit latrines because they are not safe for the people and they are really not safe for the environment. Also, only a few conditions, for instance, if you are in the rural area and there's not the groundwater is not very high and there's no other water sources, maybe the pit latrine is better, of course, than open defecation, but otherwise we don't really want to promote pit latrines as very improved facilities, but that's how they classificate the official. But you can get these slides, so you can go through these better yourself. So basically, the features of the ecological sanitation are, so you separate the waste at source, and you avoid fresh water use for transportation of the waste. So basically, you don't use water for flushing. And in most of the cases, you use the decentralized systems. For example, collection and recycling and storage are very decentralized. But of course, with ecological sanitation, you can actually build up the whole system. But there's not so many good experiences that the ecological sanitation would have been used in a very large scale yet, but hopefully we are also coming into that. So mostly where the ecological sanitation is promoted are rural areas. and flushing toilets are promoted more in the cities. What is very important is that you use reuse your urine and fecal material, and then nutrient content as a fertilizer or or soil conditioner, by doing these, for instance, urine diversion toilets, you can prevent the pollution and diseases caused by the human excreta. So they are very different than pit latrines, where the whole system is kind of open. And we don't talk about waste, we talk about resource. So it's very different kind of setup, because in normal ideation, for instance, for flushing toilets, the wastewater is really considered as waste, but we think it's a valuable resource and you can utilize that. So in this picture, you can see in a good way that the ecological sanitation is like closed loop system. So human excreta is treated as a resource. And when you think about the nature, the real nature has no waste. Everything in all the products of the living things are used as a raw materials by other organisms. So it's really like closed loop system. And the fun fact is that me and every one of you are producing the nutrients which are actually needed to grow your own food. So basically the nutrients from your urine and fecal matter could actually grow your own food, at least in theory. Of course, other benefits for ecological sanitation, I mentioned about saving the water. You don't need the water for flushing. We all know how bad the water situation is becoming in the globe. Many of the countries are really in the state that their water resources are really reducing. Southern Europe, for instance, now has a big drought, like they said that since 500 years we haven't had anything like this before. So it's really getting bad in many countries. When I was traveling Kenya, most of the locals said that, for instance, the rain pattern has really changed. So past few growing season, there hasn't been enough rains to grow food. So every time we want to or we need to flush, we use quite a lot of water, and we could really use that water for some other more valuable purposes. Still, so many most of the wastewaters in the world goes to the water bodies without treatment at all or with poor treatment. So it's a really, really big risk for the water sources. And toilet wastewater released to the water system has been seen as the most significant factor in the contamination of water. So it's a really, really big problem throughout the world. The water treatment plants cause 3% of the world's greenhouse emissions. The whole system uses lots of energy, lots of chemicals, and of course, the water which is coming out from the treatment plants is not really 100% pure as such. So the ecological sanitation is really saving the energy and chemicals. And what we have learned also here in Finland, that even us as a rich country, we can't afford to maintain our sewage networks as we're supposed. They said that basically only 10% of the necessary maintenance is done here in Finland. So what about developing countries? If we increase or make them their sewage systems longer, how can they really maintain the systems? So it's really, really a big decision in the future, like how are we going to deal this with the sanitation? Because with the waste, with the current flushing toilet system, we really waste lots of resources. The resource, the nutrients from the toilets are basically endless resource. Everybody needs to go to the toilet every day, and it doesn't stop. Whatever, it only stops when we die, basically. So it's kind of like endless resource of free nutrients. Of course, making the whole system wouldn't be free, but the actual resources in a way free, because people need to eat and then we defecate. So if you consider that with mining, we have very big problems with our nutrients. For instance, the prices of our fertilizers have been going up recently quite a lot. One of the reasons is the current war between Russia and Ukraine, because they are the ones who are actually manufacturing and using quite a lot of phosphorus, and every time there's a conflict, it may affect also the price of the fertilizers. In fact, most of the problem is that, for instance, phosphorus reserves are not evenly distributed throughout the world. So basically, they are in these five countries which are not really stable, and none of them are actually in Europe. So Europeans are really struggling with the prices of the fertilizers. Phosphorus is also a very limited resource. It is estimated that it will end within 50 or 100 years. Some even say that it will end before oil. And there's nothing we can replace phosphorus with. If we want to grow food, we have to have phosphorus. So basically, if the phosphate rock is finishing, where do we get the nutrients to grow our food? We have to start recycling them. And one of the good sources is our sanitation systems. When I share this presentation, you can check out that video from there. It's a few years old, but I think it's very nice. The whole like phosphorus, the problem with phosphorus has been explained in that video in a few minutes, so it's worth to watch. So also with the ecological sanitation, we can also improve soil fertility and quality. In the end, the long use of chemical fertilizer is really weakening the quality of the soil, so it's not really good for the soil. So we can actually increase the fertility when we are adding humus-rich soil, and it really makes difference to the crop production. It also enhances the water holding capacity and improves the soil structure and so on. And for instance, in many places in Africa, the soils are very sandy, and use of the chemical fertilizers is really not good in those places. From this picture, you can actually see the prices of the fertilizers. They have really, really gone up, and we don't know where these are heading. And for the nitrogen fertilizer, the production of them is very energy intensive. And when the energy prices are getting higher, prices of the fertilizers are getting higher. So at some point, and that point has already been passed for many small-scale farmers, for instance, in Africa or where we have worked, people say that they don't really have access to the fertilizers because they can't afford them. So they really need other sources for the fertilizers to grow their food and sell their products. So every person produces around 500 liters of urine per year and around 50 kgs of fecal matter. And the major of the nutrients is actually excreted via urine. For instance, from nitrogen, about 90%, from phosphorus, about 50 to 65%, and potassium, 50 to 80% is excreted in urine. So if you have to choose from fecal matter or the urine, I would prefer to get urine and separate the urine out from the fractures and then use urine as a fertilizer, because it has really have good amount of nutrients. It's also very good as a solution because it contains high amount of these nutrients, and also the form they are in, they occur in water-soluble ionic form, and therefore for they are really readily available for plant uptake. For instance, for most of the nitrogen is form of urea, which is basically a fertilizer, chemical fertilizer people are using currently. So you can shift from chemical urea to the urea from people. Here's the nutrient content in the urine. So of course it varies because more you eat meat, for instance, more nitrogen you have in your urine. So it depends on the diet of the person. So what we promote also in our project is that we do simple urine diversion tri toilets. You can basically do toilet seats with urine diversion. You can see the picture over there. So basically in the toilet seats in the front, there's a urine hole where you collect the urine from, and then there's a fecal hole and the fecal goes into the chamber or whatever is there below. Or you can also do a squatting pan with urine diversion. So in many countries in Africa and Asia, they use squatting pans. So basically you just put the urine hole and then you put the fecal hole. And if you want to have a washing hole, then you can add the third one, as here, the cleansing hole has been added. So basically you can then get the water out from there. You don't want to mix the water with the compost or the urine hole. So in a very simple way, you just collect the urine, maybe the 20 liter container, or if it's a school toilet, then you can just put the big container, and then from the all of the toilets, urine just goes into the big chamber, and then you can pump them and use them as a fertilizer later. So in family use, you can basically use the urine after a couple of days of storing, but in a school toilet, for instance, you store the urine for 6 months for it to be safe. Of course, when we go into the details, there will be some worries. For instance, the medical residues, well, we will talk about them later, but in general, the urine is very safe to use, at least in a family level. Then if we are talking about collecting of urine of hundreds and thousands of people, then we may have a more difficult issues or more things to consider, but in family scale, it's very safe. So storing will raise the pH for the urine, and it destroys possible pathogens. For instance, if there's some small bits and pieces of fecal matter dropped into the urine hole, it doesn't really make that much of the difference if you just store it for a few days. And if you store it in a high temperature, it's much better, but you always have to store it in a closed container so the nitrogen doesn't evaporate from the urine, because that's sort of a fertilizer effect that we want to have in the urine. So basically, we have had quite a many of different types of projects for the research and to test these theories in action. So we had this Hieraka project 2017 to 2019, where we installed about 20 dry toilet units in one of the place where they arrange music festivals and events. It's not that big as like it would get like tens of thousands of people, but approximately it can take about like 3,000 people. So quite many people still. In that building in Tampere, there's basically no sewage systems at all. And there's no running water, there's no pipes. So this is only sanitation system the whole area has, or that whole building. So those are urine diverting seats. So basically, as the picture shows, there's a urine diversion in the front, and then in the men's side, there's waterless urinals, and everything goes into these containers, which are in the cellar of the building, and the fecal matter comes to the collection containers. These are actually made from the normal waste bins. There's just a bit of a sludge collection system in the crown there, but otherwise they are basically made from the waste collection bins. And then the urine is collected to these containers, and they have been used in research purposes, because now it's not allowed to actually use urine in Finland in a large-scale farming, in commercial farming. We can use them as a research, but not really officially like grow something and sell the product. because urine is not yet official fertilizer product. And basically in Finland, the law says that all the products which are used as a fertilizer have gone through certain tests and standards and whatever. So basically, we were promoting the urine as a fertilizer, and we did some tests. So we made sure that urine would basically fulfill the needs to be as a official fertilizer products, but as an NGO, we can't apply that because it has to be like commercial entity who is applying permits. So we have left it to the companies to continue. But we collected the urine from here and then some other places, and we used them as a field test, which I'm going to show you. And then this is one of the companies had invented this micro thermal treating systems. So the fecal matter goes there after 24 hours. It's ready. And this is actually the first official fertilizer product which has been approved in Finland. So the system will make sure that it's safe within 24 hours.
Sorry.
Yes.
Where is this company
based? In Tampere. Yeah. I have their contacts if you want to check out. They have been doing quite a lot of our testing with this machine on different types of waste fractures, and trying to make different.
In 24 hours, is from fresh or from dry?
It's the one from there. So this has been like stored for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. But as you put them in there from they have to be there 24 hours and then it's then safe. The problem is that this system, like this machine, is very small.
Yes.
It's like this. So I don't remember how much matter you can actually put in at once, but it's not that much. So to scale up, they would need make the bigger systems, but they are really trying to
improve.
Yeah. So this was kind of like the pilot project for them as well. It works with the bacteria, certain bacteria, and also with the heat. So combination of these two. So it's not like composting, because we were talking about composting machine, whatever, but it's not really composting because it's like too hot for and too quick for really composting. So it's they call it microthermal system. But it's quite promising, and it really passed all the tests for the end product. So the end product can be used as a fertilizer in the fields in growing food, which is awesome. So basically, with this and biurea, other project, we were doing 4 years. Field tests to test the urine in a commercial farming, not just like very small scale thing, but a commercial farming. And within that time, we got quite a wide amount of lab tests, pod tests, and so on. So the feasibility of urine collection was researched, the management, the nutrient potential, and so on. And we were kind of like comparing, for instance, how long what kind of like transport, what kind of area would be effective to use the collect and to use the urine for, because as we know, most of the urine is still water, right? So transporting that to very long distance is not really effective. So we were trying to count like how far should, where would the fields should be located, and where could we like collect the urine from to make it effective. So quite a lot of things were researched from the urine itself. The pathogens, of course, pharmaceuticals. We researched like 50 different substances, and hormones as well were analyzed from the urine. And then we got the soil samples before sowing, and then soil samples after the sowing, and then also after growing the barley. We tested the, for instance, the residues, pharmaceutical residues from the barley, and so on. So from the soil, from the product, and from the, of course, from the fresh urine, we tried to see like how the urine is affecting. And we used these same fields for 4 years, like I mentioned. So of course we would have hoped we actually applied more funding, longer funding for this experiment, because it would be good to follow, for instance, the soil quality like 10 years, and then we would see actually like if the medical residues would be found in that sense, because now within 4 years we didn't really find anything from the soil or from the crops itself, and these are the findings we found from the products. So, or the urine. So basically, we usually know the nitrogen and phosphorus levels in the urine. I mean, they are quite same as the NPK ratio in the mineral fertilizer, which is very good sign. And the urine was stored here 6 months after taking the samples. So after that, it didn't really have any pathogen indicators like the salmonella or metals or anything. But yeah, you can go into the details when when you get this presentation. So these are the pharmaceuticals found. Basically, some of the urine was collected, as I mentioned, from the place where they organized the parties. Obviously, there's painkillers, there's caffeine. People have been drinking coffee. And then allergy drugs, antibiotics, things people use in a daily basis, basically. Hormones. So these were found from the urine after storage period. But then, as I mentioned, most of the medical residues were under the detection values when we researched the soil and then the end products. So basically, you can find them in urine, but then at least for this 4 years experiment, we didn't find them in the soil as traceable. What we, of course, wanted to find out is the urine efficient as a fertilizer? And we found out that the yield was markedly higher compared with the yield without fertilization. It was more or less the same as a chemical fertilizer. The other side was a bit lower and the other side was a bit higher. So as you can see from this picture. But let's not go into the details. But the general, the finding was, yes.
Did you use straight urine or urine
solution? It was straight. Yeah, we didn't dilute it. Yeah. In the other place, they were like spreading it with the tractor, as you can see in this picture. And the other place, the field was a bit tricky to get the tractor in, so we actually spread it by our hand. It was fun. This is one of the small research we did in Zambia, and also in those tests we found that urine has a very good fertilizer value. On these ones, we didn't take the tests for instance, medical residues, because this was done few years back, but I think for the future we will also continue to do that. There was a master thesis done, the link is here, here in Jyväskylä University, and it got quite worrying results because they took some like water samples from the shallow wells people are using. There was obviously quite a lot of fecal contamination, and which is obvious because like the area had pit latrines. So pit latrines compared to shallow wells, they are not very good mixture. And also quite a lot of pharmaceutical contamination in the water and also in the urine. So like I mentioned in the big scale, it is worrying, which we have to research more later on. But when I talk about the fertilizer effects or fertilizing, using nutrients, we don't necessarily talk about growing food crops. We can also think about growing, for instance, three seedlings, and then grow trees or flowers or whatever, or use them in, for instance, growing bananas or something which is not really touching the actual urine. If you are scared about these medical residues, for instance, at least you have to think it's in the long run. I mean, in family scale, 1 or 2 years, it doesn't really matter. But then if you do it in the long run, you have to think about it. So other things, apart from these research we have done within our project in Finland, we have worked, like I mentioned, in Zambia. Zambia has been our main working country since 2006. Now we have a bigger country program there. We started in a very small scale in a rural one of the rural areas in that 2006, and then we really have been scaling up. And now in this country program, the phase two, which we started last year, we have 16 districts involved. We have four local partners who are we working with. We also are working with the local ministries. Everything what you do for water and sanitation, of course, you have to report, and everything has to be in line with the government structures and also with the government efforts, what they're doing. So we can't just go and do something which is not acceptable. What we do, because like most of the people think that sanitation project is about to build the toilets, but it's not. It's more or on the awareness creation, sensitizing people, making them understand the height, for instance, the basic hygiene things, how the diseases are spreading, why would it be important for you to have toilets. And in our case, of course, we teach quite a lot of benefits of ecological sanitation. How do you maintain the urine diversion toilet? How do you build the toilet? And so on. So really from the behavior change to the end product, the whole chain. And there's quite a lot of advocacy for work as well. We are a small organization, obviously. We can't make Zambia to be open defecation free by 2030 alone, but we can help the local government in their efforts and so on. And we can do media campaigns, we can do this and that to improve the situation with the other stakeholders. So it's like working hand in hand with the other people. And so on. For us, we also have to make sure that we do things which are safe. So we have to teach how to, for instance, compost safely, use the urine safely, and so on. So there's lots of awareness creation and training, not really that much of construction of the toilets, because the aim is that the people would construct their own toilets, right? So we don't have resources to start building toilets for everybody, but we can, for instance, make pilots if people are not familiar, for instance, what dry toilet looks like. We built one in a village or in a family so people can come and see how they work. And when they are really like saying that we want that too, then they can come to our training, how to build the toilet, and then they can basically build the toilet themselves or use our trained builders and so on. So we just don't make things ready, but we try to change people's mindsets. Most of the currently we have programs in Zambia, Ghana, and then Kenya, a cooperation project. So most of the projects have similar types of activities, but of course Zambia is the biggest one, so we can take some other activities more into consideration, for example, more advocacy work and so on. the one of the important things is the gender issues. So for instance in our, I would show you some pictures here. For instance here, basically you can't see from these pictures, but it's a training for construction bricklayers, and over half of them were ladies. It's not very common thing in Africa for ladies to build anything. But we really try to consider gender, which is also one of the key elements in Finnish developing aid work. So in everything we think about this gender balance. And for instance, the school wash programs we have, we build toilets to the school and so on. And with the hygiene training, we also combine with the menstrual hygiene training and so on. So gender issues are quite the things what we consider. Also for disability mainstreaming. So past few years, the toilet we have been building are not that accessible. I really have to admit that. We have quite a lot of stairs. The toilets are high. This new state phase of the project, we have been trying to think about the accessibility, and this next few years we think about more. We have actually created some accessible designs which we start to use, so in the end we could really say that all of the toilet would be eventually accessible for everybody. This is the reason why we actually do the cooperation with the Disability Partnership Finland on this Zambia program, so we can actually use their expertise on the disability and accessibility issues. So for instance, here you see there's quite a lot of steps in these toilets, which we try to get rid of with the design. So basically this is the latest design from Kenya, so you can see it's actually accessible. And also these toilets, they have the ramps over here, so we are also trying to improve. So here are some of the activities, like I mentioned, lots of trainings. We have used, for instance, drama groups in our trainings, because it's very good and nice way to entertain people, but also give the message. So there will be a certain small drama explaining, for instance, what dry toilet is and how to use the urine and so on, and people are really like entertained. There's lots of dance and things like that. So on this picture we will share, we have had the hand washing event. That one we have done quite a lot, especially through the COVID time, so promoting hygiene and are using quite a lot of resources on that. This was the time when Lusaka had cholera epidemic, so we teach them people how to stop cholera, washing hands and so on. So things like that we are doing. We have had different types of experiment to use different types of material to build toilets. So in this one, we actually used the crusher to crush glass bottles, and we made the bricks out from that glass and used them to build the toilet. So it was also like recycling the glass. The green bottles in Zambia, they are not reusable. So, yes.
Okay. from the Bible?
I don't, we put just cement and then the sand from there. Yeah. But if I remember right, we had to use like 1/3 of the cement we normally use. So it was really saving the material as well. So, and the bricks were really like very, very hard and good quality. The problem was that this machine used quite a lot of electricity. And at that time, Zambia had quite a lot of electricity cuts. So it wasn't really like that sustainable, but some trials anyways. And there we are also trying to make an official fertilizer product out from the compost and from the urine. They are currently in process in lab tests and so on. So hopefully we can also have them packaged and to be in the market quite soon. These are the ones from the from Ghana. So we did some field tests and so on. And this is the compost which is coming on the school toilets after a few years of composting. So as you can see, it's like really good soil. This is the school wash program. So we built this big dry toilet in the school. Then we combine it with the garden. So basically some of the pupils were chosen to be taking care of the garden. We installed also drip irrigation system. They had their borehole there, but we just installed these tanks to increase the water. So we could actually put the drip irrigation from these tanks straight. So they didn't really need to water them every time. First year from this garden, we managed to get, they basically grow tomatoes and some other stuff. And they managed to get so much money that they paid school fees for 25 poor kids. So it was quite nice combination of sanitation and also like improving the livelihood, because in some cases, if you don't have money for the school fees, the kids will basically drop out from the school. Now, since last year, Zambia has been introducing free schools in a way, but that's in the process, I would say. We had the female groups and girls groups in the school, so we actually made these reusable pads and combined it with the menstrual hygiene management training and so on. So first they were pretty reluctant, I would say, to involve boys in those classes, right? But then after a few times we kept the courses, they were like, now it's time for boys as well. And then they involved the boys. But there's a bit stigma on talking about menstrual hygiene management with the guys and male teachers. But I think we just like need to keep on doing that. So basically, it's wonderful to realize that girls are actually start to open up and they really start to talk about how difficult the situation is for them if they don't have pads, for instance. So that was the basic things I wanted you to know. So basically, we are in the program. We are running that in until 2024. But hopefully, we will still continue in Zambia. This was the general which is quite an important thing to realize, that you need this enabling environment for behavior change to happen, and it has to. It's really the key for all of the sanitation programs. Like I said, building toilets doesn't really solve the matter. It's the behavior change which is really needed to make sure that people are doing the right things. So basically, you have to have skills, you have to have government support, you have to have legal support, and so on. So which means that you have to work with so many people to make it happen. You can't do it in silos. And the goodness with in Zambia is that 4 or 5 years ago, it changed the government, and then for this new Ministry of Water and Sanitation was established. And it really changed the whole thing, because like now there's a ministry which is focusing on these issues mainly. They were usually like they used to be in under this ministry and that ministry and this one and that one, and nobody really took responsible of sanitation. But now when you have the separate ministry for water and sanitation, it really really makes a difference. So we are really getting somewhere at that side.